You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with James Horner. James, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hey, Brainerd. Thanks.
So, James, we're talking about your show, of course, at Amos Eno Gallery, and this is really a retrospective of 4 decades of work. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. I looked through all my archives and pulled together the work I thought was most relevant, and then I still had, because I'd loaned some out or I sold some works. So it was a really big process pulling it all together, but actually really interesting and a really good learning process.
Yeah, there's something about a retrospective, right, that kind of gives you the big picture of what you've been doing all these years.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like every artist, writer, any creative person should do this now and then, because it was really just interesting looking at what was I doing, you know, 20 years ago, what was I doing in college. You know, in the show, I still had an etching I made of this club called Area, where I used to go when I was in my 20s. And I just did a etching maybe last year, and I kind of focused on horror and Guernica, Picasso's Guernica, because I like the way he divided up his canvas. But I used monsters instead of the townspeople. And I looked at that etching and the one I did when I was in my 20s, and there was a lot of similarities. You know, of course, my figures have changed some, but it was kind of interesting to kind of compare them.
Yeah, that is interesting. So let's talk about, like, what's happened in these decades, right? I mean, in one sense, this is presenting a kind of almost history of queer culture, right? Of gay culture.
Yeah.
It was called in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Things have changed quite a bit, and you were just talking about
Area
and, you know, dance clubs.
Yeah.
Everything has changed a lot. So to talk about, I guess, a little bit when you started to paint, and
mm-hmm.
or correct me if I'm wrong, but that was about in the 80s when we were talking about clubs like Area.
So when I first started out thinking about being an artist, I really didn't think that I would want to be promoting or just putting queer people in my works or really just talking about queer people. I was more focused on just really, you know, about what was going on in the world, what was going on in my life. But also, you know, I forgot which artist it was, but I was at the Leslie Lohman Museum a while back, and there was a talk on this one artist who was doing a lot of work in the 80s. And it was a video of him with a gallerist. And the gallerist was saying, you know, oh, you know, no one will ever buy these works. We can't even put them up in our gallery. And they weren't even really naked men or anything really bad. It was like these men in movie theaters, and they were somewhere in these, there was a place called the Gaiety where I used to go when I was a kid, and it was fun to watch men dancing, things like that. There was no nudities in these paintings, but the curator was like, oh, you know, we can't do this. So when I was growing up and I was in my 20s and maybe even early 30s, you know, queer art was really not something you wanted to do. It was like a faux pas. It was like, oh, that's, you know, that's tacky. So, but I, at that time, I really didn't want to just be this queer painter. So over the years, I, you know, I got my MFA at Lehman College, and I had some great professors there. One was Daniel Tegeder, who was my main painting professor. And I focused then, I was looking at grotesque, working in the grotesque. And I really was interested in that, like Francis Bacon. So my figures kind of evolved over the years. And, you know, now and then I would do some queer subject matters. You know, it was my life, so I just basically mimicked it. And then in maybe the last 3 or 4 years, my partner had killed himself. And I think there was some part about being queer and gay that was just, messed him up. But it was also during the pandemic, and it was rough on him working at home, and he might have had some other mental issues. But after that, I kind of got a renewed strength to, you know what, I'm going to focus on queer people in the LGBT community. And I feel like at my age, I'm 60 now, and I kind of want to give back more. I feel like, I can make a difference and help communities today. And, I guess I also just have a more, I'm not afraid anymore to be out there. And I think queer art is a lot more accepted. So, you see at the auction houses, a Tom and Finland drawing is, hot now. So I feel like, it's a good time to be out there. And so maybe the last 4 or 5 years, I really focused on queer culture, queer icons, heroes like Marsha P. Johnson, Keith Haring. And, I'm also looking at, regular LGBTQ folk in my community, my friends, people I see on Instagram. And, so it's kind of evolved for me, just like the way I'm drawing or painting. So it's again, looking through my retrospective, I'm like, oh, and in the 90s, I actually was hanging out with a friend who was a photographer, and I found a card I had designed, which was kind of a Tom of Finland drawing-ish. So it's like, yeah, I was kind of still doing stuff, in the queer market back then.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear about those, the difference in times. And I want to say I'm so sorry to hear about your partner in the pandemic. That must have been extremely difficult. And,
yeah.
this. I mean, kind of suffering, of course, is part of so much, right? That is and was gay culture, queer culture, as we call it now. In the 80s and 90s, there was an art scene, though, right? I mean, there was there was a pier where there was as well as a lot of sexual activity, there was art going on.
Yeah.
There was photographers.
Sorry, go ahead.
No. If it wasn't like specific gay culture art, I'd love to know about some of the formative kind of artists or art that you saw then in those times that influenced you.
So at Area, the one reason why I did an etching of it, and I did it from memory. I didn't even, it's not like today where, I'll take my pictures and then I'll save them and then, I'm going to do my painting out of that or something. Back then, you did take pictures, but it was a whole different thing. Like, you couldn't just, it was usually like, okay, do I want to carry a nice camera around if, I might, not make it home till really late and maybe I lose it. So you'd use these, throwaway cameras, which they sold in the drugstores. At Area, though, it was a big hub of artists working and creating work. And, at the time it was Basquiat and Keith Haring. And I actually still have the poster from the Warhol Basquiat show. I think it was at Shafrazi Gallery. And I'm amazed I still have it. I used to put it in my dorm room, and then it came to all my apartments, and I kept it all these years. So there was mostly, I would go to Soho, I'd go to the galleries. I wasn't as clued in to all the art scene. I was working in the corporate world in marketing. So I, wasn't as into it, back then, or had so many artist friends. I had a few, because, I just didn't, I wasn't able to really connect with those people because I was really more focused on making a living and that way. I still would meet artists, through the years, and I would do some paintings and take some classes. And that's really how I really kept going, was through my my career. I actually went back for an MFA. And the only way I was able to do that was to collect all the credits I had gotten from all the different classes I took. and add them to my undergrad BA, where I had a minor in art. So, you know, I really came around a different way as an artist. I wasn't like traditionally always doing my art and living that way. I in some ways, I think, you know, I would have, I wish, you know, I wish I could have, but it just didn't happen the way I live my life.
And since then, you know, so much has changed, right? I mean, in your paintings chronicle this a bit, right? The change.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, a change in culture. You're now doing portraits, as you're saying, of you know, icons as well as friends, but also the idea of being a queer artist, a gay artist, is no longer the kind of faux pas that you said it was, right? There's obviously a different culture now regarding inclusivity and what it means to be queer, right?
Yeah.
Which has changed the way you make art.
Yeah, and to be honest, I once I really focused, because I was kind of all over the place. I was more of a figurative painter, but I didn't really know where I was going with it. And now I'm like, it's like when you really focus on something you really love and it's part of your life, it just shows, because, you know, and since then I've gotten involved in creating zines. I took an amazing class at the Bronx Museum and learned about zines. And so I've been with some groups. I started my own group called Magenta Lounge with a few other artists. And I've been making zines with them. And the zines have been kind of a way where I kind of repurpose my art and, again, look at my art in a different way. So, you know, things have changed, I think. But lately, you know, rhetoric is kind of rough around the queer and transgender people in the country. So, you know, it's I feel like right now we're in a time where things are a little bit more difficult, but I'm still powering through, and I'm happy to, you know, happy, excuse me, focusing in the queer area and the queer world and, you know, looking through the history, places I've been, places I've, you know, clubs or, you know, Fire Island or Provincetown, and just, you know, remembering things about, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember ACT UP and all these things that were going on, like Grand Central, they'd have a protest. So, you know, it is a better time for queer art, per se, but it's still rough now because of what's going on in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, I mean, around the world, there's a turn to the right.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about your zines, and it sounds like the kind of collaborative you're making. Can you tell me more about it? I know there's, of course, the zine workshop. You know, listeners can follow the links to learn more about the show, visit, perhaps attend the zine workshop. Tell me how zines work for you. I you know, you can define them if you want, but also it sounds like you have a kind of collective. You started something else, right?
Yes. So my Magenta Lounge Collective, I started in 2025, and I started it with a public art show in Chicago with images shown through windows on the second floor of an abandoned building. So I kind of started out with that, with this collective, and then grew, and I started making zines with them. And so a lot of them on my own too. So like one of my, I guess, favorite zines I made recently is one I made from a chateau in France where I had a residency, which was pretty amazing. And, while I was there, you know, I was making artwork, and I decided to make artwork of, queer icons that have died of AIDS. And I pulled those from the Visual AIDS archive, which is an online archive. And I picked people like Cookie Mueller, Keith Haring, and with these artists, I kind of placed them in the chateau as if they were in a residency. So the zine is called The Lovelies at the Chateau. And basically, it's, you know, pictures of the artwork of these artists around the chateau There's one artist, Martin Wong, who's below this painting of this old painting that's probably was from the Louvre, of Ophelia committing suicide, which is one of my favorites, on the stairs of the chateau. And so I put these little blurbs about, you know, Martin Wong descending the staircase, blah blah blah. So it kind of is a really interesting, I think, way for an artist, and I've learned more that a lot of artists are doing this, way of viewing your work, kind of repurposing it. And, you know, if you sell a painting, that's gone. So you don't really have that anymore. But if you put it in a zine or something in a book, you know, books can be read by multiple people. You can, you know, send them out to the masses. You know, printing a zine is very easy and quick. You just print it on a Xerox machine. So, yeah, so, you know, and I also have a show in Amos Eno Gallery in our project space for Magenta Lounge. So that's going to be very exciting. I invited a bunch of other artists that I met recently in some other shows I've curated into the show. So, but the Magenta Lounge group is very casual because all my, you know, artist friends are so busy. So I just hit them up now and then, like, you want to be in the show? Can you send me your work? And so we don't, like, have regular meetings or things like that. But, you know, it's really nice when they come through and they appreciate what I'm doing. And so it's been a great experience creating my own art collective.
And the art collective, you know, it's really exciting to hear because both the art collective and zines are still a countercultural, right? This isn't about sales, and it's about an artist community. It's about sharing.
Yeah.
It's about perhaps even solidarity, right? Or is there?
Oh, yeah.
Is it themed in some way? Like, how is it managed or themed? Yeah, that's a
well.
Sense.
It's really interesting because I did my first zine fair with Magenta Lounge, the New York Queer Zine Fair at the LGBTQ plus center in Manhattan. And I was amazed to see, I had gone to Printed Matter in LA this year, but it was so interesting to see, you know, being at it and the people, the responses by people coming by. And yeah, again, you know, like you said, zines are not, you know, I'm not making $1 million on zines. A lot of them I give away for free. And it's just really, I think it's really a way for me to connect with a different kind of artistic market and learn, you know, about other, you know, zine makers. It's kind of really, it's like a very interesting niche. And I didn't realize, you know, I was, you know, it's interesting to see what people are interested in. Do they like my Marsha P. Johnson Rizzo print that I made at, you know, the Bronx River Bronx Museum? Or, you know, I made some buttons with Cookie Mueller. Do they like those? So it's like interesting to see, you know, most of these people are between 20 and 30, maybe 40s. So it's a very young audience mostly. And it's interesting to see like, oh, wow, they know who these people are. These, you know, heroes that have fought for equal rights all these years. So, you know, and also I'm looking at maybe teaching some classes at schools around New York City. In zines. So I've really, you know, they're so easy to make. You can make them by hand. You don't need a computer. And then you can print them on a Xerox machine. So, and I think the big thing about them is that they're cheap. You can, you know, make them very cheaply and hand them out to many people. And they're just an interesting way to talk about art to people too.
I like that so much. So for the listeners, of course, you're doing a zine making workshop on January 31st, 2026,
yeah.
Of course. It's an artist talk before then. There's images here, and hopefully listeners will come see the show. Is there anything else you want to say about the show, this retrospective of your life's work?
Yeah. You know, I titled it Making of an American Dandy. And I made one piece called I Pledge Allegiance. And basically, it's this beefcake on a American flag. And I was also actually inspired by my grandniece, who my niece had sent a video of her saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And I was like, this kind of really fits in with my show. And just basically, you know, it's a pledge about, you know, being an American and freedom. And I feel like, you know, my show is important right now for queer people because, you know, this is, you know, a man that's gay that survived AIDS, survived the pandemic, and just, you know, reached a certain age and, you know, is showing his life, basically. And there's one part of my show, which I think is kind of interesting, called A Wall of Decades. And basically on that wall, I'll have pictures of my life and snippets of, you know, my exhibits. And so, you know, I always loved going to, when I go to a retrospective or a show, seeing those little tables on the side that have photographs and booklets and things from the artist's life. And I was, you know, galleries, you know, a lot of times are kind of cold. There's just like these beautiful paintings or sculptures. So I wanted to do something a little bit more, you know, like human, adding a little bit more of a life of an artist rather than just the artwork. I'm always very interested and curious to see like, oh, it just makes me more interested in the work and the artist to see what this, you know, person looks like. How did he live his life? You know, what was he doing? So I think the show is going to be really interesting for the queer community as a whole. I don't think I ever have known any kind of show like this, whether it be a transgender person doing their own show or a lesbian. So it's kind of cool to kind of put, you know, basically my heart on my sleeve and put all this out there.
Well, congratulations on that. It absolutely is putting your heart on your sleeve. It takes quite a bit of bravery, and I want to thank you for that. And I also want to ask you one more question, a little off topic before we go.
Yeah.
What are you reading at the moment?
I just finished a book by Lillian Hellman, which is pretty amazing. It's called Maybe. And I found it at the Housing Works for a dollar. It's a first, first copy, hardcover, and it's about this woman. I believe it's Lillian Hellman. It's kind of like a little biographical story, and she's talking about her friend named Sarah. It's a very short book, but I like the way she writes. It's very odd and off and kind of strange. You know, she did The Children's Hour, I believe, and she's done some other movies, books that were turned into movies. So that's one I just finished, and then I'll go back to the Keith Haring book, the new by Brad Gooch, Radiant. I think it's called Radiant. Keith Haring, The Life. I can't remember the whole title, but anyway, it's a big book, so I kind of. You know, took a break from Brad and went over to Lillian.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. For listeners, again, there's links here, and please come to the show.
Great.
So you can
yes.
see it, and also the zine making workshop. Thank you so much, James, for talking with me today.
Thanks, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.